Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, which is Sukkot Lamed Aleph. We're going to be starting two lines from the top of the Amud. Says the Gemara Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Sukkah Gzula, a stolen Sukkah, V'amesachech B'rishus HaRabim, or if one decides to make a Sukkah, middle of the street, which is also considered a form of a Sukkah Gzula, a stolen Sukkah. In both cases, Rabbi Eliezer Paisel, he says a Sukkah is disqualified from use because it needs to be your own Sukkah. We learned just the other day, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Chag HaSukkah is Tas Halacha, needs to belong to you. A stolen sukkah, a sukkah which was constructed in an unauthorized location, is pasul. V'chachamim machshir, and they say, even this sukkah is kasher, if one sits in the sukkah, he's yotzei the mitzvah. Now, what type of sukkah gzula are we speaking about? Amar Rav Nachman machlekes, this discussion pertains to the following case. B'shatoykev es chaveri. He forces his friend, v'yotzeiyo misukaseh, out of his sukkah. His friend has a sukkah built. This fellow comes along and forces him out. And now he's going to sit in that stolen sukkah. Rabbi Eliezer Latame, Rabbi Eliezer says the sukkah's puzzle is in line with his shita. The Amar Ein Adam Yotze, Idei Chayivasai, B'sukkah Seshal Chavera. The one may not be Yotze if the sukkah doesn't belong to him. So this sukkah certainly doesn't belong to the one who's sitting in the sukkah. He took it away from its owner. Now, actually, we have to backtrack a bit. You see, there's a discussion in Meseches Bava Kama, we alluded to this yesterday, regarding the shaila of whether or not land, property, karka, can be stolen at all. There's one shita that karka is nigzelus. The concept of gezel applies itself to karka as well. It's considered to have been taken away from its owner to the extent of the fact that the gazla now assumes responsibility. He's koine b'kinyan gzela. He has to look after that property. It's as though it's his. The Torah obligates him to look after it. In some cases we say he can actually be koine the karka and we consider it to be his and he just has to pay back the monetary value. We discussed this yesterday. Sometimes when you have a yiyush and shinu rishus with the hadasim, etc. So, there's a basic shaila whether or not karka can be nigzel or not. Says the Gemara in this case where his friend had a sukkah, which is considered karka, Rashi explains, something which is connected to the ground, mechubala karka, has a dinah of karka. It's considered his property. Now, this fellow came along and forced the owner out of a sukkah and takes over that property. So if we hold that karka can be stolen, so in this case as well, says the Gemara, I karka nigzelis, if land can be stolen, sukkah gzulhi. So what status does this sukkah have? A stolen sukkah. A stolen sukkah is not kosher, according to Rabbi Eliezer. It's not yours. V'inami, alternatively, if you say karka ain't an exilus, the concept of exila cannot apply itself to land, to property, which is so intimately connected to its owner. It always remains within the owner's domain, within his possession. There's no exila that can detach the property from its owner. If that's the case, karka ain't an exilus, sukkah shu'ulahi. Fine, so it's not a stolen sukkah, because it's still in the possession of its owner. The concept of a gezel doesn't apply itself to land, to property, in this case to a sukkah, but at best, what is it? It's not the gazlan's. It's still its previous owner's property. It's borrowed. So he didn't steal it technically, but he's borrowing it. Sukkah shuli, it's a borrowed sukkah, in which case he's not either going to be a kontra blazer. It has to belong to you. It has to be your property. So either way, says the Gemara, we understand why Kontra Blazer, if somebody forces the owner out of his sukkah and decides to sit in that sukkah, he's not going to be yaitze because Meman of Shach, either way, it's not yours. Either because it's stolen, sukkah gzula doesn't work, or because it's borrowed. So let's go over to Rashi on the top line. V'amasachech b'shus harabim. So either he stole a sukkah, which the Gemara explains to be referring to throwing a person out of a sukkah, or he's actually building his sukkah in an unauthorized location, which is also a gezel. Hanami, gezel rabim. He's encroaching on the public's property. Rav Nachman explains, machlikas, hod pasor b'lezer. Is only kegoin shetakav as chaveir b'chaska. He forcibly removes the sukkah's owner from the sukkah v'yitzia misukasi habnuya b'kar koi shal nigzal. He has a sukkah on his property, and the other fellow comes along and chases him out. And that sukkah is considered karka. V'chol ha'machubar l'karka, harei hu k'karka. Rav Lezer l'tamei. Rav Lezer is in line with his opinion stated elsewhere. The Amar sukkah sh'ula in yaitzu ba b'peri kar yash, back on Nafchav Zayin. Either way, the sukkah is possible. If you hold karka negzelas kalaymar, in b'yeshala karka teres gezel kashar metaltlin, if we say that just as by metaltlin, by mobile objects, gezel applies itself, likewise by karka, by property, by land, lamed b'cheskas hagazel, to be considered now, as to have been transferred, as though it's been taken over, and put into the rishus, into the property and ownership of the gazlan. Okay, well then it's sukkah gzulahi. Rav Lezer darish tasa l'chamish alcha, v'lo gzulah v'lashula. If it's not yours, either if it's stolen or borrowed, it doesn't work. V'ein nixelus. Now if you'll say that the concept of gezel doesn't apply itself to land, to property, v'chol hayamim b'rishus baleahi, it's still considered connected to its former owner. Okay, so it's not stolen, but it's still not yours. It's borrowed. Havi l'shula. Rashi brings a pluktei ba'goizel. It's actually a machlekes in Bava Kama. Ikel mandamar karka nigzelas. One mandamar holds a karka can be stolen. The dorish ribuyi mu'utei. He works with a drasha of ribuyi mu'ut. In the Gemara there, ikel mandamar. There's another sheet that holds karka ainan nigzelas gezel. Doesn't really relate to karka. The dorish koli prati has a different mode of darshaning. And that's how he comes to that conclusion. So in any case, it's not really relevant to our sugya. But the point is, either way, whether you hold of this shita or that shita, you're not yoytze kontra blazer. Ultimately, it's not yours. Continues the Gemara. That's your blazer. What about the Rabbanon? The Rabbanon letamayu, says the Gemara. Rabbanon hold that he's going to be yoytze in this sukkah. They are consistent with their sheet. The Amri Adam Yoytze Dechei Vase B'Sukkah Shachaveri. That one can be Yoytze his mitzvah using his friend's sukkah. Right? They had a different drasha for that pasuk of Chag HaSukkah Tasalcha, as we discussed back in Afchav Zayin. Now they actually hold, with respect to this shaila of whether karka is nigzal or not, they actually hold karka, but karka ain't a nigzalas. That's the truth. That's their sheet in Baba Kama. Gzela doesn't really apply to land and to property, in which case we say it's not a stolen sukkah, it's a borrowed sukkah. Technically, it's still in its owner's possession. You're just borrowing it. You're just using his sukkah. V'sukkah shulahi. It's a borrowed sukkah, in which case, you're yaitse. It doesn't have to be yours. So this is the first part of Rav Nachman's interpretation. You meant to know the discussion between Rav Lezer and Chachamim is with regards to a sukkah whose owner was chased out of that sukkah. He forcibly removed the owner of that sukkah and he decided to sit in that sukkah. According to Rabbi Lezer, he's not going to be yaitze. Either it's considered stolen or borrowed. According to Rabban, you are yaitze. You can be yaitze even with a borrowed sukkah. Aval, continues Rav Nachman, Aval gazal eitzim b'sichich b'hen. Let's say he decided to steal eitzim and use them for his schach. In this case, even according to Rabbi Lezer, sukkah is kosher. He did not aver, he stole. But the fact of the matter is, he is now koine those eitzim. It's considered like it's his. So although it's not a heter, it doesn't mean that it's justified. It just means that the actual material is considered his. Rashi will explain for us because there was a shini mas, a shini hashem. There's actually a takana that Chacham wanted to encourage the gazan to do tshuva. So they decided to make it easy for him. Once you built the material into your structure, you no longer have to dismantle that structure. Just pay back its value. So either way, for either reason, these eitzim are not considered the gazlans, and he's yaitze. It's like it's his sukkah. Aval gozel eitzem asichach behen. If he actually stole wood and he incorporated it into his sukkah, used it as schach in his sukkah, divrei hakol ein lo yelad me'eitzem. All agree that the victim of the gzel, the nigzal, all he has a monetary claim to me'eitzem, the value. But the actual wood material itself now belongs to the gozlan, is considered his sukkah, and he's yaitze. That's a tremendous chiddush, because you would think, you know, if he built it into a building, into a house, it's pretty hard to get it out. So there's a takana which allows him to keep that wood and replace it with it, with its value. But speaking about using it as chach on a sukkah, which perhaps can be easily dismantled and returned, no, the chiddush of Nachman is, even if he used it for his sukkah, we say, right now it's part of a sukkah structure. You don't have to take apart your sukkah on sukkahs. And therefore he's yaitze using these pieces of wood. Now you'll notice that the Gemara, it chooses to describe this case as gozel eitzem v'sichach pen, because the ikar discussion here is regarding schach, right? Because the essence of the sukkah is the schach. So he took eitzem and used it for his schach. So we say he's going to be yaitze, despite the fact that it's stolen materials. Says the Gemara, Mimai, how do you know that to be true? Perhaps, even in this case, he's not going to be yaitze, going to be lezer. It's just a part of his sukkah, let him dismantle it. It still belongs to the nigzal, he has to return the wood intact. It's a sukkah gezula. How do we know that this diuk is true, that this fact is true? Says the Gemara, Mimai, midiktani dumi dushis rabim. Take a look at that Braisa. We see that the Braisa lists together the Sukkah Gdula together with Mesachach B'Shus Rabim. And Rav Nachman concluded from that connection that both cases are pretty similar in nature. Ma Rishus Rabim Karkel Avdei Dehu, just as the fellow who built a Sukkah in the street built it on land which doesn't belong to him. Sukkah Nami, the first case of the Braisa of Sukkah Gdula, there as well, we're speaking Lav Karka Dedehu, it's on land which doesn't belong to him. So he actually took away the Sukkah itself, but if he took just pieces of wood, he just took Schach and brought it into his own property and used it for his own Sukkah. In that case, he's Koina that ate him, and the Sukkah is his and it's Kasher. Let's go over to Rashi, about halfway down the Amud. Says Rashi, Aval gozel eitzem v'sichach behem. In that case, we say, Ein zu loy gezul av leishula. It's not stolen, it's not borrowed. It's yours. The kananu b'shini ma'isa b'shini Hashem. He was koinet. You have to return the value. But the actual material now belongs to him. Shini ma'isa. It was reformed, it was redesigned, it was incorporated into a structure. Shini Hashem, it's not considered part of a sukkah. It's relabeled. We designated. V'oid mishum takonas hashavim. On top of that, you have a takana. Takonas hashavim, to enable people to do tshuva. Ein etzorach lister binyanei el yachzer dam. Chacham exempted you from returning the actual material. Just pay back its value. Now Rashi has a kasha. Udamrinan v'perek hayoshin. What about the Gemara back in Perek Hayoshin where we learned d'moid rabbanan begzula? Even the Chacham agree that you're not yaitze when it's a stolen sukkah. That's a kuliyama. We had a pasuk for that. L'cha my dar shebei l'mutei gzula. Says Rashi, even the rabbanon agree a stolen sukkah is not kosher. So, how does that fit with El Gemara? You take a sukkah gzula, you masachach b'shus rabim, according to Chacham, it's kosher. What do you mean? It's a stolen sukkah. Says Rashi, that's speaking about a different case. Lav b'goizel sukkah mechuberes l'karka. The Gemara over there, that the Chacham amoid a sukkah gzula is not kosher, is not speaking about a fellow who stole a sukkah, which was mechuber l'karka. In which case we just concluded, there's no gzela applied, then it's only a she'ula. It's still considered to be in its owner's domain, its owner's possession. You're just borrowing it. That's kasha kointe rabbanon. Nor was the case speaking about when he stole materials and used it for a sukkah, which case he's kainet, as we just explained. What then is the Gemara there speaking about? We're speaking about a very specific sukkah built on a wagon, top of a ship, the Atzman Exelis, where you can actually steal the sukkah itself. It's a mobile sukkah. It's not considered mechubel karka, in which case you've stolen something. Gezel is applied in that case. In that case, there's no exemptions. You can't just return its value. You have to give back the sukkah. Why? Why is it different than our case? There's no takana there on account of Bali Teshuvah. He didn't exert any effort in building that sukkah. He swiped this fellow's wagon with the sukkah on it, this fellow's yacht with a sukkah on it. He didn't spend any money on it. There's no investment on his part. It's straight out a sukkah gzula. He has to return the actual sukkah intact. In that case, of course he's not yaitze. So in summary, we have four cases here. We had a case where he took materials and used it for his sukkah. In that case, it's the kanas hashavim. You don't have to return the actual material. You're yaitze according to all shittas. It's no longer considered a sukkah gzula. He acquired it. He's kind it. It's his. We had the two cases in our Gemara. Sukkah gzula, which Rav Nachman explained, was he forced the owner out of his sukkah. That's mechubel karka, or he was masachich in the street. So that's again another example of sukkah gzula mechubel karka. We according to Blazer, it's possible. More explained, either it's considered stolen or borrowed, it's not yours. Chacham said in this case it's kosher because you haven't really stolen anything. There's no gezel when it comes to karka. It's borrowed. Borrowed sukkah is fine. But in the other case, that's what Rashi is referring to, the case where he had a sukkah on a wagon, on a boat. We actually took the actual sukkah, and it's a mobile sukkah. It's not attached to the ground. In that case, you have no excuses. It's called a masa gzela. It's a stolen sukkah. You have to return the sukkah as is. In that case, even the rabbanon agree, you're not yaitzi. Continues the Gemara. Ha'isaft, there was a story with an older woman, the Asoy Lekameda Rav Nachman. She came complaining to Rav Nachman. Amrele, she tells him, look, Reish Galusa, the head of the community here, Vikulu Rabbanon Devedish Galusa, all the Rabbanon, who are part of his household using his sukkah, but sukkah gzula aviyasvi, sitting in a stolen sukkah, they stole my material. The servants of the Reish Galusa took my material and incorporated it into their sukkah. Look, they're all using the sukkah gzula. They're not yids. Tzavcha, she yelled and she complained. Rav Nachman didn't pay any heed to her complaints. So she responded. She says, Amrale, she told Rav Nachman, how are you ignoring me? Itasa, a woman, the Havale Lavo, whose father had, her grandfather, Avram Avinu, had Tlas Meya, Vitamni Sri Avdi, 318 Avadim, when he went out to pursue those kings who took Loit captive. So he went out and tried to undo that wrong, that avla that was done to his nephew. So this woman, who's a descendant of that great tzaddik, Tzavcha Kamaychu, is yelling before you, V'leyashkechisubo, you're not paying attention to her? Where's your compassion? Look, I was wronged. Why don't you follow in the footsteps, an example of my father, Avram Avinu? Amal Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman turned to the Talmidim and he said, "Peisa hida." She's just a vocal woman. Ve'ein la elad me'etzim avad. She doesn't really have a right to claim her materials back. All she has is the me'etzim, the value of the materials that were taken from her. That's the halacha. The fact is, they built it into their sukkah, and they no longer have to return those materials. Sure, they have to pay back the value, but that's it. Amar Avina, ha'ikshura de metalalta, de gzula, ikshura is a beam, ikshura de metalalta, which was incorporated into the sukkah, de gzula, it was a stolen beam, avdi le rabona takanto, mishum takonas marish. Chacham made a takana, and they applied takanas marsh, takana of the beam, even in this case, which means that the ganav doesn't have to extract that beam from his structure. All he has to do is pay back its value. Let's go over to Rashi. So right before the wide lines, it's about 3-4 lines before that. Avdu Rabbana takanta litol damav. Takana is that the victim can retrieve the value, but not the actual material. We don't say Inkan have some ruba. Look, what's the big deal? Let him extract that beam. It's just a sukkah. No, we say that the claim is merely financial. He can keep the beam. The mitzvah mashvid kol shiva kivinim kva. Since it's serving as part of the mitzvah structure, which is going to be used throughout 7 days, that gives it prominence, that gives it chashivas. We don't obligate to go dismantle a sukkah and have to rebuild it on Yom Tov. No, we consider it like a structure, like any other structure, even though it's really a hut and a diras arayah, according to many shittas. But the fact that it's going to be used for Yom Tov, that gives it chashivas, and we don't have to dismantle and rebuild. Okay, says the Gemara. Pshita, of course. We just concluded the Gemara said that Eitzim, which was taken by a gazlan and put into a sukkah, need not be returned intact. Pshita, Maishnome Eitzim. Why would a beam be different than Eitzim? Maudotema, perhaps I would think. Eitzim Shchichi. Eitzim are commonly found. Just go to the local lumberyard and find some more Eitzim. If we say, look, why go ahead and force him to dismantle a sukkah? If it's just as easy for you to buy new ones, replace the old Eitzim, let him just pay you its value, rather than have to take apart a sukkah. Aval haylo shchicha bar beam, which is not so commonly found. Emolay, perhaps in this case, we're going to take up the victim's case. We'll say, look, on the one hand, you have to dismantle your sukkah. On the other hand, you're grossly inconveniencing him. He has to go find a new beam. That's not right. So perhaps in the case of a beam, we should not apply takanas marish. Rather, he should return the beam intact. Kamashim lo, nechilish is no. Even when it comes to a beam, since it's part of a sukkah structure, we leave it as is. We're not machalik between a house and a sukkah. But, says the Gemara, hane mila b'goy shiva. This only applies throughout the 7 days of Yom Tov, when the sukkah is in use. You don't have to dismantle and rebuild. Aval basar shiva. Once the Yom Tov is over, once the 7 days of sukkah use are behind you, hada b'enei. To extract that material and bring it back to its owner. Because now you're done with this sukkah. And there's no takanas marish after sukkahs. But v'chiber betina, if you attach the material with cement, afilu lachas shiva, even after Yom Tov, nami, even then, yoiv le'dmi, all you have to do is return its value because now it's become a permanent structure. And takanas hashavim applies in this case as well. Now the Ritva actually says, now I understand why Rav Nachman was, so to speak, giving this Isha a hard time. He was actually trying to help. She was complaining that he took her wood. He was trying to postpone her. If she would wait till after Yom Tov, then she would have a valid claim. As the Gemara concludes that after Yom Tov, the Nigzal can retrieve his material. But she was insisting and yelling, no, I want to get it back now. He had no choice but just to ignore her because it's on Sukkot and on Sukkot itself. There's a takonas marish, takonas hashavim, which doesn't allow her to claim the actual material itself. Okay, so in summary, we learned about 4 cases of a sukkah gzula. In the case where he was gazel etzim v'sichich ben, which case he's koine, and there's a takonah, which only obligates him to pay back the value, the damim, according to all shittas, is considered his sukkah, his schach, and the sukkah's kasher. We have 2 cases where there's a machlekes. Tokav chaver of Yitzir, he forced his friend out of the sukkah, and he took over that structure. Or he was masachich in the street. In both cases, we have a gzela pertaining to something mechubar lekarka, or Leza says, that it's considered a borrowed sukkah, and he's not Yitzir. Kon chachamim, in a borrowed sukkah, you are Yitzir. And we actually had one tzad in the Gemara that according to Rabbi Elazar considered a sukkah gezula because karka isn't gezula. Either way, it's not his. In the last case, where he actually stole a sukkah intact, a sukkah which was a mobile sukkah, transportable sukkah, b'reish ha'gola, or on top of a svina, according to all shittas, this sukkah was actually stolen. It's a sukkah gzula, which has to be returned intact. In this case, all she disagree that it's a sukkah gzula is not yaitze, is mitzvah. Continues the Gemara, Tani, we learned in a brice. Yavish pasul, you have a lulav or esek dried out, it's pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, he says, dried out, it's fine. Omar Rava, I'll explain the machlekes. Machlekes belulav. The discussion applies to a lulav only. Why? By esrog, it is a pasuk. L'kachta l'chem, by Marishan, creates hadar. Hadar, beautiful. Prettiness applies to an esrog, according to all shittas. Question is regarding lulav. Do we connect lulav to esrog or not? Machlekes belulav. The Rabbanan savri makshinan lulav to esrog. Rabbanan hold, we connect lulav to esrog and we say, my esrog by hadar. Just as hadar applies to esrog, it has to be nice and beautiful. Af lulav by hadar, likewise, a lulav has to be hadar. Yavish is not hadar. Rabbi the savar, loy makshinan lulav esrog. We don't connect one to the other. And therefore, although a esrog needs to be hadar, but not a lulav. Avo be esrog, of course, tiver akoyl be hadar be inon, because the pasuk says creates hadar. Now Rashi learns that aside from a kal v'chomer, the other yud gimel midas, the other formulas like the gzeres shava and the hekesh, one cannot introduce on his own. You can't originate it unless you heard it from your rebbe, you heard it from Sinai. So Rabbi Yehuda didn't have a kabbalah to implement this connection, this hekesh between lulav and esrog. Esrog needs hadar, but not lulav. Tosfos disagrees. He says we find many rayas that a hekesh can be originated. A person has the ability to introduce his hekesh, even if it wasn't a miskabel from Sinai. Rather, Tosfos says that Rabbi Yehuda held that misvara. It's not logical to require hadar by lulav. Tosfos says lo shayach lashon hadar el beperis. When it comes to a pri, to an esrog, that's a nice, pretty, beautiful fruit. But that concept doesn't apply to a branch, to a lulav. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even a dried out lulav is kosher. Asks the Gemara, is that so? Ube lulav loy boy Rabbi Yehuda hadar? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't apply the concept of hadar to a lulav? But tonight, listen to this mission. Rabbi Yehuda holds that you meant to tie together, right? The lulav, the hadasim, the arovis. Boy eged, you have to bundle it as one. Now, what material do you use to bundle? What kind of strap do you use to tie them together? Vatnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yagdenu Milamalo. Sorry, before we get to that, it's going to be the next Gemara. But getting back to our, this is Halacha Mishnah and our Mishnah. If you have the leaves of the lulav which sort of opened up, spread apart, what does Rabbi Yehuda say? Yagdenu Milamalo. You have to put them back together, tie them together. So tie them up on top so they lie neatly alongside the spine of the lulav. Right? Then the Kama held. Nifra do all of his kasher. Rabbi Yehuda says, go ahead and tie it back together. My time alav mishon de boy hadar. Shall we not assume that this requirement is based on hadar? It has to lie neatly alongside the spine of the lulav. It has to be hadar. Says Malai, no. Kediktani time. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda requires tying those leaves back together is because of the following reason. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, the pasuk says, Kapis tomorrow. And we learn, Kafos, bound, tied up, Vimhoya Parad, Yik Pitenu, which means that if it was open and separated, you have to go ahead and bind it back together, so that it lies nicely together. So it's unrelated to Hadar. The pasuk indicates that it's meant to lie in that manner. Says the Gemara further, V'loy bayi hadar? Is that so according to Rabbi Yehuda? Hadar doesn't apply to lulav, atnan. Ein oigdenes ha-lulav el-beminoi. The Rabbi Yehuda. What type of band, what type of strap they used to tie together the lulav with the other minim? Minoi has to be the same type of material. Like the minim that you are bundling. It has to be lulav material or hadas, maravas material. You can't use other foreign materials. That's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Should we not assume it's related to beauty and aesthetics? My time, should we not assume the reason is lav mishum de bayi hadar, because he needs it to be nice, has to match. So you see, the hadar applies to lulav as well. That's more lie. Actually, not. That's not the reason. I'll prove it to you. The Amar Rava, afilu besiv. Even though Rabbi Yehuda requires minoy, but it could be something which isn't necessarily nice looking. Afilu besiv, you can use the fiber which grows in the bottom of the palm tree, as long as it's the same species, same type of material of palm. Afilu beikur dedikla, or the skin, the bark of the tree is fine. So it's unrelated to beauty. Velo my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. Awesome. If that's the case, that it's not hadar related, why then does Rabbi Yehuda insist on using the same min? Well, that's due to a halacha concern. The kasavar lulav tzarech eked. Rabbi Yehuda holds that lulav needs to be bundled together, right? It has to be made into a new entity. Lulav hadasim and arabais. V'maisi min achrina. Now, if he's going to use a different type of substance to tie his minim together, you're running into a new problem. You're not meant to add, right? Baltoisiv, you can't add to a mitzvah. He's going to add a new type of material into that bundle. Havalu chamisha minin. Now you're running into problems because you've created another min in your bundle. You have, instead of four minim, you have five minim being used for your mitzvah, which is an Isra Bal Toysif. And this is Dafka Rabbi Yehuda, because according to him, the Eged is a single entity. So when you go ahead and you bind another min in there, you're creating a new entity which has an additional min above and beyond the required number of minim, and you're about toisif. Whereas according to the chachamim, who don't really require, you don't have to bundle them together. In that case, even if you choose to tie them together, you're not really joining them together as one. And Toisif later explains this, that when you take another min and you tie it together, he says, you're not really shaking and taking that other min the way it grows. It's sideways, bundled around the other ones. So it's not really a way of handling a min, in which case Tosis explains that it wouldn't be considered Bal Tosif, according to the Rabban. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, that this is the way to do it. You have to bind together the minim. So by using other material to do that, you're creating an entity. Right? You're meant to bind it together with a strap going sideways. That's the way to do it. If you do it with another piece of material which is unrelated to the minim, you're adding a new min, which is baltais. So in any case, it has nothing to do with hadar, and we don't really have a raya against Rava, who tells us that when it comes to estrig, kuli alma maskim, you need hadar. It's a pasuk. When it comes to lulav, chacham say yes, hadar, they connect lulav to esrog. Rabbi Yehuda does not connect one to the other. When it comes to esrog, of course you need hadar. Has the Gemara be esrog by Rabbi Yehuda hadar? Is that true? That when it comes to esrog, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that hadar is a requirement. But Tanya, listen to this brice. Arbas minin shebelulav. Those four minim, four types used in the lulav mitzvah, lulav esrog adas min arabes. Kshem shem poichsam hen. Just as you're not meant to deduct any one of those minim, kach in masif and alein. Likewise, I'm meant to add another min. Loi motza estrik. Suppose he couldn't locate an estrik. Loi yave loi parish. He shouldn't bring a quince instead. Veloi rima, nor a pomegranate. Veloi davar achar, nor another fruit. Either estrik or nothing. Kamushin kshir. Let's say the minim are withered, partially dried out. It's still okay. Kshir. Yevation. They're fully dried out. Psulim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer af yevation. Even if they dried out, they're kosher. In fact, I'll prove it with his story. Once again, Rabbi Yehuda proves his point with his story. So the story involving the city dwellers, Rashi explains, they don't really have access to palm trees, so they had a shortage of lulavim. They would inherit their lulavim, bequeath it to their children, their grandchildren. It would be passed on from generation to generation. Apparently, says Rabbi Yehuda, dried out is fine. Amr loy the chacham responded, Misham raya. How can you prove from there? That's not conventional. Ein she'asat chak raya. It's a time of necessity, a time of need. They were short. But typically, you're not meant to use a dried out lulav. Now, the Mefarshim seek to explain the Gemara here. It sounds like neshasat chak, you can use a dried out lulav, which isn't typically kosher. How does that work? So some say that even though hadar, according to chachamim, is a requirement, but Chacham had the ability to be selective when it comes to applying hadar. Ran says the concept of Hadar was an undefined concept which was given over to the Chachamim at their discretion. In this case, where it's either Hadar or no mitzvah, then they rule that better do the mitzvah even at the expense of beauty and Hadar. But typically, you're not meant to do that. You're not really Yaitse in a conventional circumstance. In any case, says the Gemara, what do we see from this price? A ketonimius. In any rate, we see Rabbi Do Eimer Afyveshin Ksher. Tanakam said dried out minim are disqualified, and Rabbi Do responds by saying no, yiveshim are fine. Lashon Rabim yiveshim my lava esrog. Should we not assume he's referring to both esrog and lulav? No, he says the Gemara lulav. It's specifically to the lulav, but when it comes to an esrog, then it has to be hadar. In fact, the story that he proved his point with involved only a lulav. We don't connect lulav to esrog, but when it comes to an esrog, priyets hadar has to be beautiful. Omar, let's go back. We learned geshem she'ein poichsen men, just as you don't go down from 4 to 3 or to 2 minim, you have to have 4. Kach ein masifan alein, likewise you don't add an extra min. Pshita, of course, why would you think otherwise? Why would you be allowed to add? There's an isra bal toisif to enhance a mitzvah above and beyond the requirement. Perhaps I would think to say Hoyel v'amar b'yuda lulav tzorach eged, since Rabbi Yehuda requires the lulav to be bound together with the other minim. Now perhaps this can result in a leniency. Suppose he brings another min, a fifth min, and doesn't really bundle together with the other ones, so it doesn't relate to them. This stands on its own. And the other one stands independently on its own. They don't connect. They don't relate to each other. And perhaps there's no problem with Baltoisif. The added min is not part of the process because it's out of the bundle. So according to the Rabbanon, there's no Hava Mina. That would be Mutter. Since Eged is not a requirement, then whatever you have in your hand is part of the Masa Mitzvah, and you have too many minim. That's an Isra, Bal Toisif. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's out of the bundle, it's out of the loop. That's not part of the Mitzvah. Kamash B'lon. Oh, the Chiddush is no. And the Pshat would be that, although it's not part of the bundle, the fact is you, the person, the Gavra, the fellow doing the Masa, is handling more than the necessary number of minim. And therefore that in itself is considered an Isra of Bal Toisif. Kamash Mala. So that's the Chiddush of the Brice. Continues the Gemara. Amamar. So let's go back again. Lo Yimotza Esri. This fellow couldn't locate an Esri. Lo Yavi Lo Yiriman. He shouldn't substitute it by using a pomegranate. Lo Yiparish, a different fruit, whatever Acher. You can't use any other fruit. Esrig or nothing. Pshita. Of course, says the Gemara. An Esrig is an Esrig. Maudotem, perhaps, I would think, Laisi. You should go ahead and substitute it with another fruit for the time being. So that we keep the concept of esrog fresh. So that the community, the kids, will be mindful of the mitzvah esrog. So at least do something as is occurring. You're not Yoitze, but perhaps it's better than nothing. Kamash Bon, the Chiddush says, no, don't do that. It's just going to create confusion. Zimran, the Nafik Chuberme, at times it can create confusion. Dasik Le Misrach. It might continue. A kid will say, well, you know, my father, we have a minig in the family, we shake a lulav with a pomegranate. So better do without the mitzvah than create a false and confusing impression. Says Tashma, let's bring another raya. Raya to what? Rava told us that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that esrog needs to be hadar. Listen to this brisa. Esrog hayoshin pasul. If you have a old dried out esrog, it's pasul. Vir Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Oh, pretty clear. Even by esrog. According to Rabbi Yehuda, hadar is not required. Tuyufta, the Rav Tuyufta, in fact, this is a refutation of Rav. The bottom line is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the word hadar in the pasuk does not indicate niceness and beauty. The Gemara soon will tell us what Rabbi Yehuda does use the word hadar for. But in any case, it's a stira on Rava. It's pretty clear that according to Rabbi Yehuda, whether it's lulav or esrog, hadar is not a requirement. Really? V'lei bai hadar? Rabbi Yehuda does not require hadar by an esrog, but not tnan. Listen to this Mishnah. Hayara kekarsi. You have an esrog which is as green as leek. Rabbi Machsher says it's fine. Rabbi the Paisel, he says it's no good. Gemara assumes, lav mishum de bai hadar. Should not assume the reason why Rabbi is Paisel is because he requires hadar. And a green esrog doesn't conform to that. Has more no. Mishum de loy gama pera. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda does not allow a green esrog, nothing to do with aesthetic beauty, nothing to do with niceness or hadar. Has to do with the fact that it's an undeveloped fruit. Loy gmar pera. It has to reach a certain stage in its development process. Say, well, this is a fruit that can be used for mitzvahs, lulav, which requires a pre-eitz hadar. Once it's green, it's not yet reached its level of maturity to be considered a peri. Now, Tosis points out that we have some esregim. Esregim habayim lefonenu yurekim kekarsi. Sometimes we get green esregim, and Tosis says there will be kasher. Why? Because even according to Yehuda, if you know for a fact that these esregim, when they're kept around for a couple of days, they start yellowing and get their proper color, and that's an indication that these esregim have already achieved enough maturity and are considered gmar peira. This we do all the time. We take the green esregim, we put them in a kli together with some apples and the reyach. The scent coming from the apples actually has a yellowing effect on those esregim. So Tosfos says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it will be okay because Rabbi Yehuda is just speaking about those green esregim which will never turn yellow. They're too young, they're too unripe for that. But when we know that reach a certain point that with a little manipulation they can change colors, then that's fine. That's mashma from Tosfos, that even while it's still green, it's okay. Because the Gemara reverts from the connection, the color hadar connection. The Havamin, the Gemara figured green is not hadar, but then the Gemara reverts from that. It has to do with development and maturity. And therefore, it says Tosfos, if we know for a fact that these will turn yellow in time, then they're considered mature enough and are kosher for lulav. Continues Gemara Toshma. Listen to this, right? Again, we're discussing whether or not Rabbi Yehuda requires hadar by esrog. Shear esrog katan. What's the smallest esrog you can take? Rabbi Meir Omer ke'egg, the size of a walnut. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ke'beitza, the equivalent of an egg. Lav mishum deboi hadar. Should we not assume Rabbi Yehuda requires a larger esrog because of hadar? Loi, says the Gemara, mishum deloi gamar peir, for the same reason as we mentioned earlier. Smaller than that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is considered undeveloped and not considered enough of a peiri to be kosher. But as far as hadar, that's not a requirement. Tashma, listen to this right. Ubegadol, what's the largest esrog one can use? Kadei sheyechoy shnayim yadachas. It can't be too big. It has to be small enough that he can handle two esrogim in one hand. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yisrael, but no, way larger than that. Afilu echad u'shnei yadav. Even if it's bigger than that, that he needs two hands to handle one esrog, that's okay. Afilu echad b'shtei yadav. My timer. Why? Does Rabbi Yehuda require a smaller size esrog? Lav mishum devay hadar. Should not assume it's based on the hadar requirement. Smaller is nice. Loi says, well, that's not the reason. There's a more practical concern here. Kiva da amar Rabba. Rabba tells us, lulav bimin ve'esrog b'sma. The proper way of shaking lulav is lulav with the hadas and arava in the right hand, three mitzvahs in the right, and the esrog, which is just one mitzvah in the left hand. Zimnun de michlefilei. It can happen that he was offered, he was handed the minim in the reverse order. So the lulav was given over to his left hand, the esrog in his right. Va'asi lafuchinu. And he's going to look to reverse it, to switch it around. And while he's going to maneuver the minim, va'asi lefsui might drop and the esrog will become pasul. So it can't be too large in size. It has to be small enough that he can properly maneuver it from one hand to the other. Let's go over to Rashi, two lines from the top. Kivadama Rabba Esrog b'smol v'lulav b'yamin. Why? Mishum dehochet las mitzvahs ve'esrog chad mitzvah. The reason why we hold the lulav and the hadas and rav on the right because it's three mitzvahs and has more chashivas than the esrog, which is just one. That's going to be held on the left. Ve'zimna de machlif and lay. It could be that he was offered the minim in the reverse. Shenoisim loy esrog minim. They gave him the esrog to his right. Ve'lulav ve'smoil and his lulav. He took what is left. Ve'tzorach lahavchan. He has to go and switch it. Miyad liyad. Ve'lecha ze esrog ve'lulav ba'achas mihadav. Which would necessitate grabbing onto all the minim with one hand, until he can actually switch it. If the esrog is too big, there's a concern, it might drop from his hands. If so, he might get a hole. Concludes the Gemara. So we say that hadar is not a requirement according to Rabbi Yehuda at all. Whether by lulav and even by esrog, what about the pasuk which says, Lukachnal Chem creates hadar? Hadar doesn't mean beautiful. Ahu, hadar, v'ilone mishana l'shana. The pasuk is merely describing the type of fruit that you meant to take. What type of fruit? One that lives on, stays on in the tree, mishana l'shana, from year to year, and that's the esrog. Esrog doesn't necessarily fall off its tree. It could stay on for a number of years. We learn from here that the pasuk is referring to an esrog. So at the end of the day, the Rabbanon require hadar by it. Esrog creates hadar, which means beautiful according to them. And by lulav as well, we connect the two, lulav to esrog. According to Rabbi Yehuda, hadar is not a requirement by lulav or by esrog. What does hadar mean? Hadar b'ilone, mishana l'shana. We learned in the Mishnah, shel asherah v'shleira nedachas as pasul. So you have a lulav which came from an asherah tree, which came from Ir HaNedachas, a city whose inhabitants worship of Avodah Zarah. So these are Avodah Zarah materials. Pasul for lulav use. Shel asherah pasul, you mean to say a lulav taken off an asherah tree, which was worshipped, which is an Avodah Zarah tree, is pasul? Even b'di'evit? V'amar Rava, listen to Rava. Lulav shel Avodah Zarah lo yitol. He shouldn't use an Avodah Zarah lulav. L'chatchila, it's not proper, Rashi says. It's ma'us l'gavaya. It's repulsive. It was used for avera. V'im not al kasher. But after the fact, if he used it, it's kasher. In our Mishnah, we say, but the evidence possible. Says the Gemara, we're speaking about two different types of Avodah Zarahs. Hacha, in our Mishnah, where it's possible, is speaking by Asherah de Moshe Askinan. It's taken from Asherah tree, which was in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ktusei Mechtas Shuri. That tree is going to be burnt. Pasuk says he meant to burn those Asherah trees upon entering Eretz Yisrael. And being that it's slated for Sreifa, for destruction, this lulav, which is meant to have a shear or four tefachim, loses that prominence, loses that size, chashivas. It's going to be burnt. And therefore, ktusi mechtes, ktusi means chopped up, broken up. Ktusi mechtes shiuri, its shear is chopped up, it's like broken into a million smithereens. It doesn't have a large size unit status. It's not regarded as a big lulav. It doesn't have a shear, because it's going to get burnt and destroyed. Whereas Rava was speaking about an Avodah Zarah, which doesn't necessarily have to be destroyed, in which case we say, L'chatchila, don't take it, but by the Eved, it's kosher. Let's go over to Rashi, 8 lines from the bottom. Ba'asherah de Moshe, oysam shehayu b'shas kibush Eretz Yisrael, those are Asherah trees, which they encountered when they captured Eretz Yisrael, she'et shrichan ha'kos of Sreifa, k'dechsev ha'shareim t'ezrifum ba'esh. Explains Rashi, v'luv tzorach shir. Luv needs to be a certain shir. V'hai k'man d'mechtas shiuri. This asherah luv is considered as though it's lacking shir. Given the l'shreif akoy, it's meant for burning, for destruction. It doesn't have that prominence. What's the point of shir? What's the difference between a small thing and a big thing? A large item has prominence, has chashivas. It's a large unit. It's big in size. It can serve in a greater capacity than a smaller thing, so to speak, right? But if something is meant for destruction and burning, it's not going to be used in any case. It's on its way out. It no longer has that chashivas and that prominence. So that's unique to Asherah de Moshe. But when it comes to ordinary Avodah Zarah, Tosfos explains that there are different types of Avodah Zarah. Sometimes an Avodah Zarah is going to have to be burnt, like an Avodah Zarah which was worshipped by Yisrael. Which the Gemara of the Zohar incidentally says that Asherah de Moshe conforms to, because they worshipped those trees when Yisrael were worshipping the eagle. So it's as though they were preparing it for them, so to speak. It was related to the Yisraelim. It was attributed to the Yisraelim. It was considered Avodah Zarah Shel Yisrael. Tremendous chiddush. And therefore, that Avodah Zarah has to be burnt. There's no way out. It can't be mavatal, that Avodah Zarah. So that's the Mishnah Bayas. That lulav needs to be straif, needs to be burnt, needs to be destroyed, has no shear. Rav was speaking about Avodah Zarah of a guy, which doesn't necessarily have to be destroyed. It can be mavatal, it can nullify, it can cancel Avodah Zarah. In which case we say, this concept doesn't apply, not meant to use it, but with the evidence kosher. Continues Gemara, prove it. De Kanami. Take a close look at the wording of the Mishnah, it's pretty clear that the lulav of the Asherah is speaking about an Asherah which is going to have to be burnt. Diktani. The Mishnah puts it together with Dumya the Erne Dachas. Together with Erne Dachas. Sounds like it's a similar case. An Erne Dachas, a city whose inhabitants served of a Zara, and they're going to be burnt, all the Nechasim of that city are going to be burnt. So the fact that the Mishnah equates the two, puts it together on the same list, Shema Minah, it's pretty clear that they're both based on the same context, the same reason, the same concept. That the Asherah and the Erne Dachas are slated for Sreifa, in which case they lose their Hashivas and their Shir, and that's why they're Pasul. Okay, let's do a quick chazar of today's daf. We discussed the halacha of Sukkah Gzula, Kontra Blazer Pasul, Kontra Chachamim Kasher. Rav Nachman explained that the Brisa is speaking about a very specific case of a Sukkah Gzula. And the conclusion of the Gemara was, we actually have four cases. When he took materials and used it for a Schach, all agree, he's kind of that material. All he needs to do is repay the value. And since he's kind of, it's his Sukkah. And it's kosher according to all shittas. The Braisa was discussing two specific cases. One, where he forced the owner out of his sukkah, or he built a sukkah in an unauthorized location, in Shus Rabim. In both cases, it's a sukkah which was mechubar lekarka and stolen. The Gemara tells us, according to Rabbi Lazar, it's not yaitzeh. Whether it's because karka can be stolen, it's a stolen sukkah. Karka cannot be stolen, it's a borrowed sukkah. In either case, it's not his. Sukkah has to be yours. According to Chachamim, karka cannot be stolen, in which case, we say it's a borrowed sukkah. And you can use a borrowed sukkah on sukkahs. And as Rashi points out, if he actually stole his sukkah, which was Bereish HaGola, a portable sukkah, according to all shittas, this is a true sukkah gzula, because it's not mechubal karka, it's like any other item, any other metatlin. Gezel applies itself to that. And a stolen sukkah, according to all shittas, is not kosher. Even Chacham agree, we learn from a pasuk, lecha has to be yours as opposed to stolen. The Gemara told us about takanas marsh, which applies even in the sukkah. It's takanas hashavim, that if one incorporates stolen material into his structure, he needs to pay merely the value, not the actual material. The Gemara is a chiddush that this applies even on sukkahs, despite the fact that it's just a temporary structure. And as the Gemara concluded, this is only during sukkahs. But after sukkahs, you have to return the material, unless he was mechaber with tina, with cement, in which case it became a permanent structure, and takanas hashavim applies. We had the story with the itasa, who complained to Rav Nachman. And then we discussed the concept of hadar. According to Rabbanon, applies to Esrig and to Lulav as well. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the word Hadar is not referring to beauty, rather Hadar b'ilana mishana l'shana. And therefore, there's no din of Hadar by Lulav or by Esrig. You're not meant to add or detract from the number of minim, nor are you meant to substitute. Using a different type of fruit can come to michshel and confusion. In the last piece of the Gemara, we learned about the Zara. So if it's a mezar of a goy which can theoretically become nullified and cancelled, the chatchil yamet to use any material from that of a mezar for a mitzvah, but the avad yoyetze. However, when it comes to a mezar which is going to be burnt and destroyed, for instance, asherah de moishah or eir dachas, since it's going to be destroyed, it loses its chashivas. It's as though it has no shear, and it loses its shear, and therefore it's pasul. Kol tov to you and atzlacha rabbah.